Welcome to Obesity, a Disease, the official Obesity Medicine Association podcast exploring the many facets of the disease of obesity. Obesity, a Disease podcast is brought to you by the Obesity Medicine Association, the clinical leader in obesity medicine.
Welcome. My name is Dr. Harold Bays, Medical Director and President of the Louisville Metabolic and Atherosclerosis Research Center, located in Louisville, Kentucky. Welcome to the series of podcasts entitled Obesity, a Disease. It's the official podcast of the Obesity Medicine Association. With regard to my involvement, I'm Chief Science Officer of the Obesity Medicine Association. I'm also Editor-in-Chief of Obesity Pillars. And now the Obesity Pillars, what we do is we go through recent publications in Obesity Pillars and we pick out articles that we think would be suitable for a podcast. And then when possible, we try to get people that were authors of these papers and such, these manuscripts. And we were just so fortunate to have with us today Dr. Sarah Carjou. She's not only a co-author, but quite frankly, she's the one that got this thing rolling, this paper rolling and everything. And it just ended up, well, I'm gonna talk more about my opinion about this paper, a subjective opinion. But Sarah, why don't you tell the people who you are and what you do?
Absolutely. Well, thank you again for inviting me to come talk to you today. My name is Dr. Sarah Carjou, and I'm a pediatric gastroenterologist with Johns Hopkins All Children's Hospital based out of Tampa Bay, with appointments also at Florida State University and University of South Florida. I am an associate professor at those institutions and assistant professor at Hopkins, soon to be associate professor there too. I completed my residency at Children's Hospital of Pittsburgh and later my GI fellowship at Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. And I am a part of the OMA, I've been part of the OMA since 2014, and I'm a certified physician executive. I'm a fellow of the OMA. And my passion is pediatric obesity and metabolic liver health, because as you know, children are the next demographic that is really feeding into the problem of metabolic dysfunction associated steatotic liver disease. And the rates are going up. And every provider, in my opinion, doesn't matter what their field of medicine is, should understand this disease process, because it is feeding into the adult disease. So I am excited to talk to you about our paper today, and we can go over some of the key points.
Sure. And we're recording this in early 2025. I noticed you kind of slipped in that Philadelphia reference there. Based upon the Super Bowl, I think there are a lot of people, maybe your experience, like to throw that in there as well. All right, so what are we talking about? What we're talking about, there's this publication. It's entitled Metabolic Dysfunction Associated Steatotic Liver Disease, MASLD, in Children with Obesity and Obesity Medicine Association, an Expert Joint Perspective 2025.
Right.
And the thing that I must say, when I was, you know, reviewing this paper and such, you know, prior to publication or whatever, I just came away with thinking this is just such a high quality publication. And my personal opinion is that I think it's going to be the standard on this topic for a while, because the amount of effort and such that went into this, I mean, you could clearly say this is a work of love, like a work of art and such, and just really good. And one of the things that is noted in the paper is this work was formulated from the collaboration of eight hepatologists or gastroenterologists with a MASLD expertise and two physicians from the Obesity Medicine Association. So when we say
right,
that it's a joint expert, joint perspective, we don't mean Well, the Obesity Med Association was essentially running the show, and these other people were kind of tagging on. These people were involved, okay? These experts were involved. So let's just get right to it. I think hopefully most people have this kind of nailed down, but I'm not sure everybody does. When I start throwing out words like metabolic dysfunction associated steatotic liver disease or MASLD, I start throwing that acronym out there. What am I talking about? What am I trying to convey to folks when I use these newer terms?
Absolutely. Well, first, there was a lot of discussion in 2023 and later a publication in 2024 by Ranella et al. And the concern was that the previous nomenclature, the previous terminology, which included NAFLD and NASH, had the word basically of alcohol or alcoholic liver disease. And so they felt that to be affirmative and non-stigmatizing, that they had to change the disease name, but also they've expanded the different types of steatosis, that, you know, the different names for the different steatosis you see in people, because it's not just alcohol or diet that may be, you know, just black and white, alcohol or diet that's causing the disease. Sometimes people have alcohol and diet, right? So what I mean by that is the overarching term that they decided to call it is steatotic liver disease. And then from there, it covers alcoholic associated liver disease, and it covers metabolic associated liver disease. So it's really getting up to speed and really getting a better terminology for that liver disease. So MASLD, or, you know, what we call metabolic dysfunction associated liver disease, is replacing the old terminology of NAFLD, and MASH, starting with the letter M, is replacing the old terminology of NASH. Now, it's the same definition that we've always discussed at the OMA and with the AASLD, which is the Liver Society. So MASLD, essentially still the presence of greater than 5% hepatic steatosis without injury, and MASH is the, you know, greater than 5% steatosis with injury and with inflammation.
Well, let me just interrupt here and say, look, when you say steatotic liver disease, I mean, that's what the word means, fat in the liver, right? That's the literal meaning. So that only makes sense. And then the other thing is, you know, changing from non-alcoholic, I mean, even above and beyond the stigmatizing things and everything, it's just that non-alcoholic doesn't tell you anything. It just tells you what something's not. On the other hand, with the new terminology, you've got metabolic dysfunction associated steatotic liver disease. And I think that's where everything's going. I mean, whenever you have somebody that has fat in the liver, what's the first question? What's their glucose? What's their blood pressure? What are their triglycerides? And oh, by the way, what's their body fat, right? So right now, you know, one of the major emphasis in the obesity space with regard to research is when we treat the obesity with anti-obesity medications, we're not just concerned about the weight of patients, we're concerned about the health of patients. And one of the primary things we're focused on is the amount of fat in the liver. And so it just only makes sense that again, rather than telling people what it's not, telling people what it is, and given this association of you know, fatty liver with all these metabolic abnormalities we see so often in our clinical practice, including obesity, it just makes sense to call it metabolic dysfunction associated steatotic, you know, liver disease. So we have new terminology. We've got the muscle, we've got the MASH, we've got fibrosis and everything. How does this relate to children, though? Are people that young, does it really matter in folks that are less than 18 years of age? Is that relevant to our clinical practice?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, children are having more metabolic liver disease at earlier age. And so I will tell you, sometimes, you know, if I have certain children, even at the age of two, you know, you're starting to see, you know, they have a random ultrasound. They say, oh, we see a little steatosis. Or even by the age of eight, you know, they're usually referred to me for elevated liver enzymes and maybe an incidental ultrasound. So this is something where the prevalent, you know, the amount of disease, the prevalence is going up. And for children, what happens is when they're defined to have steatotic liver disease on imaging or biopsy, there's another level. Because remember, steatosis can happen if a patient has autoimmune disease, genetic disease. You know, there's so, you know, medications. There's so many reasons why the liver accumulates fat, and really, the fat is a sign of dysfunction and stress in the liver. That's all that that means. But when you want to see if it's due to the child's metabolism, diet, you know, and related to the comorbidity of obesity, the next thing you have to look at is a cardiometabolic criteria, and to see and screen the patient for other metabolic problems. And if one of those cardiometabolic criteria is matched, therefore they are diagnosed with MASLD. So yes, it does apply to children too. It starts early, and then this disease gets into adulthood.
Well, I mean, I think that's the issue, isn't it? One of the biggest risk factors of having MASLD in an adult is having MASLD as a child. I mean, it's one of the biggest risk factors of having obesity as an adult is having obesity as a child. So this shouldn't come as a surprise to anyone, right? Well, okay, so let me ask you this. I mean, you mentioned ultrasound and look, ultrasounds have their place. I get it. It's something that for which people are familiar. And, I think there's some clinical utility to that and everything. But I mean, I think you'd agree that's a pretty, you can have fairly significant liver disease due to steatotic, liver disease and such. And an ultrasound, it's not maybe that abnormal.
Right.
So when you're, and I think we, many of us understand or at least have a sense about, all those bewildering number of tests and markers that you can do in adults to check for fatty liver and such. I mean, we do those all the time. Certainly within clinical trials, we do those all the time. But what I was really interested in is somebody committing, okay, making a commitment to what are the types of tests that you guys would recommend for testing of the fatty liver in children, because I'm telling you, Sarah, I didn't know. I didn't have any idea. So you got clinicians out there. They're managing some or all their patients are pediatric practice, a lot of young folks they're seeing and such. If there is a suspicion of fatty liver, whether it be due to side effects, medications or unhealthful nutrition, lack of physical activity or genetics or whatever, what are the preferred diagnostic tests to evaluate for MASLD in children?
Absolutely. Well, it also depends on which society's guideline you're reading. And what's nice about the paper is that we put all of it there. So as a clinician, we will give you what is published, and then, you know, all of us will make our own practice style. So the first thing is that you have at your, you know, in front of you all of these tools. You have liver enzymes, you have imaging, you know, different blood tests. And typically, many people find ultrasound to be less costly, right? So
That's right. It's
they might have,
simple. It's easy to understand. People, they get it. They kind of get what an ultrasound is. And yeah.
right. So they'll do the ultrasound. The only thing you have to know is that there's limitations with ultrasound,
Exactly.
but it can be used in conjunction in certain societies, which I'm going to go over. They can be used in conjunction with the labs. So, you know, one of the things is in a perfect world. Now, if you want to talk about good imaging, if in a perfect world, if we didn't have the cost, whether we do an MRI, proton density fat fraction, MR elastography, VCTE, like all of those different diagnostic modalities, they're much more superior. As well, of course, liver biopsy is the gold standard. You know, as the authors, we felt that if in the future MR technology becomes less costly, that would probably be better because you can actually see the amount of fat in each lobe. And what was published before, they actually showed that each lobe has different amount of fats, not all consistent. So if you look at the North American PGI Society, they don't like ultrasound for screening. They do tend to tell you to start checking ALTs, which is just blood work. But if you look at the European Society for Pediatric GI, they say do the ALT with the ultrasound. And then we have the Adult Society, which puts their guidelines for pediatric MASLD. That's part of the, it was actually this like right hot off the presses, 2024 November liver meeting. They recommended an ALT as screening method for children 10 years of age or earlier in the presence of cardiometabolic risk factors, family history, severe obesity, with consideration of ultrasound as an initial to support MASLD. So that's what I'm saying. It depends on which society you go with. If you're going with one of them, just says do the ALT because it's cost effective. They don't want to increase the cost of healthcare. If you look at the European or the adult model, they say you could do the combination of the ALT and the ultrasound. Ultimately, what we're lacking in peds is those biomarkers like in adults, like for example, fibrosis 4, the FIB-4 score. And so those protocols have not been established in children. And so that's why we're, you know, we're as pediatric GI and hepatology, we're trying to find the most cost-effective way to approach this. And we've shared that approach and the current guidelines per what's published and what's been discussed at liver meetings in this paper.
And look, that's why, you know, it's so humbling. We do a lot of clinical trials, obviously, of anti-obesity medications, but also looking at fatty liver medications. And so we routinely do MRI-PDFF, which is what you mentioned. But that's in clinical research, and it sure doesn't have anything to do with pediatrics, all right? So, I mean, in a sense, the applicability of what I do to what you and your colleagues did, I'm just worthless. I'm just like, I'm not helpful at all. And I like your other point you make where you say, you know, if you look at the liver, different lobes, you know, can have different varying degrees of fat. So even when people say liver biopsy is the gold standard, depends on where you put the needle. Yeah. And sometimes just a very small variance of where you put the needle can end up with different results. And I would say that some of the other ones, elastography, you know, some of these other things can sometimes give variable results. So it's just, I mean, the way we're able to manage that on the adult side is, yes, the MRI-PDFF, you know, pretty good test. You throw in the, you know, some of these blood markers, biomarkers and such that we do. FIB-4 is one you mentioned that's very commonly used. And we're good to go, even if you don't do the biopsy, although we're doing more and more biopsies because it's not near as horrible as maybe it once was. And so, again, even though it has limitations, still the gold standard. But hardly any of that has applicability to pediatrics because we just don't have the data, right? And that's what I really like, you know, about this article is it's like, okay, in the absence of data, what on earth do we do? And I think you all spent like a lot of time, you know, talking about, secondary causes of the increase in fat and liver, and also, you know, these algorithmic approaches and such, you know, and the effects, what are the effects of anti-obesity medications on the fatty liver and such? So to have all this in like in one place that's applicable to pediatrics, I just think that's going to be very helpful to a lot of clinicians out there and their patients.
Well, that was the purpose of why we did this. You know, we came up with this idea in early 2024 because we wanted to give clinical guidance, not just to discuss the research, but the clinical guidance, because depending on which society you read, the AASLD, NAS Begin, S Begin, you can see there's variations. And so we wanted this paper to be the combination of all of these recommendations at the tip of a clinician's hands so that they don't have to read three or four articles. They can come straight to this and they get basically the punchline of what's current in the literature.
I'm going to have to qualify one of the things you said there. They'd have to read three or four articles. I don't know. Maybe I'm just speaking for me, but this article has, 214 references.
Right.
I think I would have to read a bit more than three to four to get the information that's in this article. Because again, it does cover the spectrum. I mean, I'm not saying I'd have to read all 214 of the references, but I think I'd have to read at least like 70 to 100 of them to get just the basics about what I would need to know for fatty liver in children. So I just think this is, just really well done. Your colleagues, I think you would agree, just did really helped out with just fabulous work. And you were the one who first contacted me and said, look, what do we have to do to get this done? I'm like, do it. And you got the folks together. And so I want to congratulate you, especially because I think this is just a tremendous piece of work. So, okay. Well, so thank you very much, Sarah. This has been tremendous. The article we've been talking about has to do with, fatty liver in children. And if you haven't read it yet, it's in Obesity Pillars. I would encourage you to do so. And, I just think this is another example of the sentinel kinds of information you're going to get from the Obesity Medicine Association, and in this case, jointly with other experts and such, and how it is that we relate this to this particular podcast, which is entitled Obesity, a Disease, the official podcast of the Obesity Medicine Association.
Thank you very much. And please be sure to look at the article, and I think you'll find it very, very helpful.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Obesity, a Disease. For more information about Obesity Medicine podcasts and other valuable resources from the clinical leaders in obesity medicine, please visit www.obesitymedicine.org/podcasts. If you enjoyed this episode and want to listen regularly, head over to iTunes where you can subscribe, rate, and leave us a much appreciated review. The views expressed in this episode are those of the host and guest and do not necessarily represent the opinions, beliefs, or policies of the Obesity Medicine Association or its members. Please join us again for our next episode of Obesity, a Disease.